ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
What a special guest we have on the program this morning in our talking point. Because you may not recognize his name, but you will, well, you will recognize his voice, or at least his voices. Eric Bauzer is a Canadian voice actor, and he has been working in this very tough industry for more than two decades. And along the way, he has lent his voice to characters that you know and love, like Stimpy from Ren and Stimpy, Woody Woodpecker, Leonardo from the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, and Bob from Bob's Burgers. But more importantly, perhaps, since 2018, he has been the voice behind some of our favourite Looney Tunes characters, Bugs Bunny, Daffy Duck, Porky Pig, Elmer Fudd, Foghorn Leghorn, Marvin the Martian, Sylvester, and Tweety Bird. And it is our great honour and privilege and pleasure to have Eric Bauzer as our very special guest this morning. Eric, welcome to Overnights.
What's up, Rod?
Oh, I love it.
That was a wonderful intro, Rod, fit only for a star like me, Daffy Duck. Woohoo!
He's my favourite Daffy Duck. I mean, there's something about Daffy Duck. There's just, he's brilliant, isn't he?
Yeah, I mean, obviously Bugs is the front runner for the Looney Tunes, but the unhinged, unfiltered mind of Daffy, and you know, he says all the things we wish we could say, I guess.
Well, I love it when they, you know, something happens and his beak goes round to the other side of his face or the other side of his head, and he has to.
And he's pretty seething about it. He goes, "Let's try that again." Yeah, you know. Excuse me while I fix my face. Yeah. He's pretty darn funny. He sets himself up for the comeuppings that he gets. So. When you do see that beak flip around, it's kind of like, yeah, well, you were asking for it.
If anyone has any questions they want to ask Eric about any of those characters, any of those voices, he's obviously only too happy to do those voices for us, then feel free to call 1-300-800-222, 1-300-800-222. You can text as well, 0467-922-702. And we're going to get to the tough question first. Courtesy of Jeff, he's texted in and said, "Is Bugs Bunny a rabbit or a hare? An early appearance was in a cartoon called Harum Scarum." So is the Oscar-winning rabbit? He's not the Oscar-winning hare, but tell me about Bugs Bunny.
Sometimes I've been called a rabbit by a particular hunter duck. Ooh, that's white wad. I'm going to get that Waskowee Wabbit if it's the last thing I do.
I guess it just depends on the wordplay. Usually they kind of just go for the joke. Whatever works in the moment, he's either a hare or a rabbit. And is there a big difference between a hare and a rabbit?
Only a hare or a rabbit knows for sure. You know, so many voice artists are kind of reluctant to, you know, if someone comes up to them and says, "Oh, do that voice," or "Can you do this?" You are obviously not one of them. You love what you do. You love dropping in those voices.
I just give them the warning. I say, "Look, Bugs Bunny is now voiced by a Filipino-Canadian man, but Santa Claus is still real." That's what I assure. I say, The guy who gives you presents every year is still a mythical figure, but...
I hate to break it to you, Doc. Bugs Bunny is from Canada. Toronto, to be exact. Ain't I a stinker?
So many great American actors do actually come from Canada. I'm glad you're filling, you know, you're completing that as well. All right, so let's start at the very beginning for you. Were you someone that used to do voices when you were a kid at school, or what happened? How did it start?
I mean, you hit it right on the nail right on the head, and I feel that was probably the same case for you as you have become a man of broadcasting. You know, I think that every kid growing up does voices in their family. There's always that one kid in everyone's family that probably runs around the house and imitates whatever they hear on the radio or TV. And at best, at that age, probably sounds just like a kid doing voices. And then somewhere between elementary school, like middle school and high school, your voice starts to change. Oh my gosh. If I had a girlfriend, she'd kill me. You start going through puberty and your voice changes and you start to at least have more of a range, I guess. That's the key there. I remember being in high school, kind of being a bit of a, what they call the class clown, a bit of a disruptor. Rather than have the teachers reprimand, me, they say, okay, why don't you do your work and save your bits for the morning announcements? You know, every day at the start of school, they'll play the national anthem as they do and, over the PA system. And then they might have some facts about, you know, the specials in the cafeteria, like. So I would use Saturday morning cartoon voices in the main office. Like, I'd be like, "Ooh, Marge, I can't believe they have the French fries and hamburgers in the caf."
"Oh, Homer, that's bad for your cholesterol."
Yeah, so I would do, you know, Homer and Marge. I would do,
"Hey, Beavis. There's a basketball game after school." You said ball.
Yeah, so I would, you know, I would just do what I would have done in class, but I would do it over the radio system. And what was fuel for the fire was anytime I would walk back to class, there would be someone in the hallway, and they'd be like, "Was that you?"
And I'd say, "That's right, Duck. Sometimes I'm a rabbit. Sometimes I'm a duck."
And that was it. That's kind of how it snowballed.
Growing up in Canada, how important was that? That, in fact, you were, you know, removed from the United States in that way. You were that just that little bit further away. And also you're getting a lot of British comedy and British culture as well in Canada that the Americans really know nothing about. I always think of Mike Myers as a bloke who's obviously just as influenced or more influenced by British comedy than American comedy because he came from Canada. Was that the same case with you?
Absolutely. And you couldn't have picked a better Canadian icon. Aside from Jim Carrey, Mike Myers, I think, is my number one influence in comedy with a bullet. He, or with a hockey puck, eh? You know, he says the most Canadian a Canadian will be is when they're not in Canada. And, you know, that holds true, at least for me. And believe it or not, we're both from the same city of Scarborough. We're both from the same suburb of Toronto. We both grew up. I'm about one street over from Mike Myers Way. They named a street after
him. Wow.
In our small city of Scarborough, and yeah, I remember staying up past my bedtime, hearing the TV in the living room. My mom or my dad would still be watching TV, and he'd be watching the Benny Hill Show. And I mean, if it is my mission now, I will declare this on Australian radio, to produce a biopic about Benny Hill starring Mike Myers. I think he would be an amazing choice to kind of step into those large comedic shoes. And oddly enough, I know, you know, in by watching documentaries and at least by observing Benny Hill's comedy, is that he wasn't like, I don't think he was kind of seen as the more traditional British comedian. In fact, he was mainly influenced by American television.
Yeah. But he, just on Benny Hill, though, don't you think, though, that if you grew up watching that, you kind of got the immunization to Benny Hill, sort of, you knew about it from the start. If you were to just watch Benny Hill now with no background, you'd think, what is this?
I honestly, it's oddly enough you say that again, because yesterday, and this is strange, only because Instagram and TikTok is just the endless void of, you know, people who create content and then people who just repurpose and repost. And I finally saw like a Benny Hill clip, and it took like, I've been on these social media platforms for years, and I'm surprised that he hadn't made the round sooner. Yeah. But it was Benny Hill as an English teacher. Writing the word assume on a blackboard saying, if you assume you make an ass out of you and me, and you know, it's, you know, it's total like Austin Powers humor.
Yes.
The low hanging fruit, but it's you get a chuckle out of it, and he's totally in, you know, he wasn't doing a British voice. He was doing the, you know, the Sigmund Freud voice, and you know, there it is. He's like doing these wacky voices. And the same thing goes for any Canadian growing up in Canada being exposed to SCTV.
Yes.
You know, Eugene Levy. Oh gosh, don't get me started on that guy. Oh, wow, you know, Schitt's Creek. Oh god, how embarrassing. Oh boy. You know, Rick Moranis. Hey, who does your taxes? Of course, Dan Aykroyd. I know he wasn't on SCTV, but another very, very respectable Canadian. Actually, Ghostbusters is back in theaters today. How about that? but yeah, all of these great Canadians, Catherine O'Hara, Andrea Romano, Andrea Martin. Andrea Romano is the voice director. I keep getting my Andreas crossed, but. Yeah, plenty of influential comedians that were always doing multiple characters. John Candy. Oh, yes. My gosh.
Okay.
There were so many.
All right. David in Adelaide wants to talk to you. David, good morning.
Good morning, Rod, and good morning, Eric.
Yeah, good morning, David. How's it going, Doc? What's for breakfast?
Oh, grits.
Grits?
Oh, yeah. They better have carrots in it.
Yeah, it has. Now, what about Daffy Duck when he meets Nasty Canasta?
Oh, brother!
He's got
bad breath. Yeah, they don't call him Nasty for nothing.
What does Nasty Canasta sound like, Eric?
I mean, he basically is just all breathing, isn't he? It's a tough call for me. There are some instances where. They may have changed the character design even just a little bit, but yeah, he's usually just one of those, you know, Chuck Jones. If there's like a major villain, sometimes the character can only be seen from one angle, like the side view, and it's a pretty interesting choice. But yeah, he's usually just he's just a big bully.
Why do you like him, David? What's the story about Nasty Canasta?
Well, Daffy gets beaten up by him, and at the end, Daffy says, "I think you're pretty tough, don't I?"
And then isn't there a part in that cartoon where they drink like this insane drink from the bar that like
snake hops or something like that, isn't it?
Kind of like straightens their ties, you know, like it's like that scene in the Three Amigos where they're at the bar and they finally take a sip of tequila and they and they have like that weird body twinge. But yeah, I loved any time the Looney Tunes went back to the old West. And I know Nasty Canasta was kind of in that genre of Looney Tunes meets the Old West. So,
alrighty.
Yeah, good Eric, callback and good Eric, good memory.
Kerry, can you do Porky Pig before I go?
Yeah, well, of course. And there's only one way to end our call, and that's by saying that's all, folks.
Good night, Porky.
Thank you very much for that, David. Oh, that's brilliant. Eric Bowser is our guest. He is not only the voice of Bugs Bunny, he is the voice of all of those Looney Tunes characters, much, you know, so many others as well. And I don't know, is it easier? Is it what you prefer to do an animated voice or a voice of an animated character or a real person? Where do you find it? Where do you get in? What's you in for those things?
It's funny. I feel like they're kind of one and the same. I feel like, I had mentioned her earlier by accident, Andrea Romano, who happens to be, I think, one of the highly decorated Emmy Award winning voice directors in at least my generation. She directed Tiny Toon Adventures, Batman the Animated Series, Animaniacs, Freakazoid, Hysteria. Just basically everything that I would race home after school to watch in the early 90s, all the way up until I got to work with her on one of her last animated series. I was the voice match for Puss in Boots. For Antonio, when Antonio is too busy being Antonio, he says, "Call Eric Bowser, he will do it." Yeah, so I ended up doing the voice match for Puss in Boots for DreamWorks. on a number of projects now. And
so
Andrea
just explain
Romano,
that, because people know that, you know, who does the voice in the movie. Well, are you doing it in all the other media, or what happens?
Yeah, I guess when he doesn't have the time, it usually comes down to availability, and when he's not available, or when he just cannot do it, or you know, is okay with me doing it. I believe he's approved me as the voice match, as I think celebrities have to. They kind of have to like listen, obviously, to make sure they're being portrayed correctly. And yeah, I've done it for an Affleck commercial, an insurance commercial. I've done it for video games. I've done it for, it was my first Emmy nomination back in 2014, I guess, 2000, it was before my son was born. Nice. And yeah, it's kind of incredible. Again, a real person. And I think there's two elements that go into, you know, voice acting, as Andrea Romano put it. It's the acting always will come first, because no matter if it's a human real life character or an animated fictional character that we all know and love, it you have to really care about this character as a viewer. You have to, as a performer, you have to convince the audience that this character exists. There are some stakes involved. And you have to really be invested, and that only comes with a believable performance. And something like with voice matching Antonio, when you watch footage, and after this call, hop on YouTube and type in Antonio Banderas behind the scenes footage, Puss in Boots, and you'll see him in the audio booth promoting the film. He knows it's a promo video, but he's just having the time of his life performing this character. And what's crazy is that I will never be able to predict which way he goes with the character, whether it's really, really low and intimate, or really high and jovial. Like, he can switch on a dime between these moods, and only he could do that. But, you know, that was my goal, essentially, when I was voicing Puss in Boots, was if I can get the writers to laugh with, like, a spin on a joke that they had written, like, I'm sure Antonio would have, then I knew I was hitting the bullseye.
Eric Bowser is our guest. There are so many things I want to ask you, Eric, and a couple of things. One controversial on The Simpsons. You did Homer and Marge earlier, but the voice of Apu, and they had to change that because the voice actor was not Indian now, or an Indian-American. Is that a problem when you are doing all sorts of different voices, that you are going to have to do someone that is not of your background? I mean, Puss in Boots is one, obviously. Yep. So what do you think about that controversy? And you know, are there some characters or voices you just simply wouldn't do?
You know, that is a great question. And I think it's a tight wire rope to walk across. In a case like The Simpsons, it's kind of funny, because at the center of the show, I've always thought that the main targets were Americans. Yeah. Like, it's kind of making fun of Americans. You're making fun of this kind of like a deadbeat dad, this stay-at-home mom, this bratty kid, this overachieving, you know, daughter, and then you have the other, the accident baby, you know, the baby that wasn't supposed to happen. And I always thought, well, the main target here is the Americans, and then it kind of just spreads out. I always thought it was more of a satire than it was, and a parody than it was like, oh, we're making fun of, you know. Because I mean, other than not being culturally represented accurately, I mean, Apu was just the guy that worked at a store, you know, and I feel like, you know, they didn't quite make fun of his heritage. I don't think, as much as they make fun of like Luigi on the show, who is like the guy who owns the Italian restaurant and is, you know, or the pirate, or the, you know, the guy with the peg leg on the show,
or the Jewish chemist.
Yeah, they make fun of all the stereotypes after they made that realization of Apu. And I don't even think that they even use the character anymore. So, yeah, it's an interesting choice. I think it's a good thing that we now have authentic casting. And again, like, I think it's also up to, you know, someone like Antonio, or the creator of a show like El Tigre. I was hired to do the voice of a Mexican wrestling dad, and I had auditioned for, well, actually, I read the pilot, like I was just cast as this character, and it was my Ricardo Montalban impression. If you don't remember a show called Fantasy Island, he was also the bad guy in Naked Gun, Mr. Frank Drebin, I presume. Yeah, like I was doing like a take on Ricardo Montalban. And what was funny was, like, Nickelodeon found out. They're like, wait, you just put this guy in, and he didn't even audition. We have to get him to audition, and we're going to audition everyone in town, you know, everyone auditioned. I had to re-audition for that role, and everyone auditioned against me. And then at the end of the day, Nickelodeon was like, damn it. They're like, he's pretty good, and I guess we'll cast him. And that was before, like, you know, authentic casting movement was in play. Nice. This was like way, way before. And yeah, I guess it's just up to, but there's also history. If you think about it, like the Filipino, like my last name is Eastern Spain. It comes from archipelagos of the East in Spain. Pausa is a Spanish last name. As we were in history, taken over. We had a Spanish, the takeover at some point in our history. And yeah, it's kind of interesting. But yeah, I think that the availability of authentic casting, making work more available for some cultures and people yes. who have different ethnicities who may not have had a chance to read for a character at some point, if that means they have more of a chance to be represented accurately, then absolutely.
And we should remember with The Simpsons, the reason that those people do the voices is they were the ones who were there on the Tracey Ullman show when it all began. And if it had been somebody else, well, they would have got the gig. Eric Bowser is in LA, in California. We are here in Australia. Justin is calling from Birmingham in the UK. Justin, good morning.
Yeah, g'day, Rod. Welcome back. It's great to hear your dulcet tones, mate.
All righty. What, you got a question for Eric?
Oh, I do. Eric, I'm absolutely fascinated by you, mate. You're absolutely fantastic. I've always been fascinated by cartoon voices and voiceovers and impersonators and things like that, voice impersonations. I once asked my dad, "Dad, do you think I'll ever be able to work for Disney and do all the Mickey Mouse and things like that?" And he just looked at me in the face and just said, "No." And I was like, "Well, okay." But I just really want to know, how did you get the gigs? Where did you start? And what sort of steps did you take to get to where you are? Because I think you're great.
All right, thanks, Justin.
Let me tell you something, Justin. That is the exact attitude that you need to succeed in this industry, is when someone says no, when
a door closes, Justin, that three other doors will open that should eventually take you to your path. So never give up. I actually just taught a voice acting class yesterday. There were 12 people over Zoom. And it's the first time I've done a voice directing class in a very, very long time. And I loved it because it just reminded me, yes, we all got to start somewhere. There were some people in the class that this was their first time behind a microphone. And there were some people in the class who had been doing it for years. And, you know, no matter where you're at, there's always like, you always have to go back to, you know, to center. And you always have to like practice and practice and practice. If it's something that you still want to do, I say just go back in the booth and try it. There could be a Mickey Mouse in Australia. There could be Mickeys all over the planet. You never know these days, especially with a globally known character like Mickey. They may want a Mickey with an Australian accent. You never know.
Well,
or
Keith Scott, one of our great voice artists, he did Bugs Bunny, I think, for at least a movie or two. So,
yes, and advertisements in your region, and Mark Silk in Australia?
Ooh,
was there
an
actor by the name of Mark Silk? He was another guy that I remember growing up. I happened to run into one of his demo reels, and I was like, holy crap, this guy's good, you know? like regardless, he completely lost any accent. I've lost my Canadian accent. It's been years, eh? But every time I go back to visit, I suddenly go back into that twang. But yeah, I feel like it's I think it was my college professor. When I had PTSD when you said the word no. When I was in college doing radio, television, broadcasting, and film, I was studying all these genres in little sections, and I wanted to work at this animation studio in Los Angeles as my internship. And one of my professors said, you know, it's nice to dream, but I think you should just stay home. I think you should just stay in Toronto. You know, it's pretty safe. You don't have to like find out like, you know, where am I going to stay? You know, I'm not getting paid, so I can't afford rent. But I kind of took that as a challenge. You know, I kind of felt like, oh, well, no, I'm still going to do it. Thanks for your advice.
What was the big break? What was the moment or the voice that meant that you thought, right, I've made it to a level I wanted to be at that allows me then to do all these other ones?
Well, it had to have been like when I subbed in as Stimpy when Billy West was not available to return for the reboot. The reboot itself was of Ren and Stimpy at the time, and if you think about it too, it was kind of an interesting time. I think the gross out humor of 90s cartoons had kind of like, you know, did its thing.
Yeah.
It kind of like, was it passé in the early 2000s? And I think what killed it was the birth of Jackass. You know, it's like, why would I want to see a fart joke cartoon when I could see a real fart joke done by Johnny Knoxville and Steve-O? You know what I mean? Yeah. Like there was a moment there where adult cartoons, and that's what Ren and Stimpy's reboot was an adult cartoon. It hadn't quite like, there wasn't quite the demand yet for wanting an adult cartoon. I remember when we were made on Spike TV, there was Kelsey Grammer had a show called Gary the Rat. It was like this giant rat who was a lawyer. And then there was Stripperella. Pamela Anderson this superhero, and then 18 and up Ren and Stimpy. And, you know, I don't think either of those cartoons lasted very long. But it was an interesting time to make adult cartoons. There was we now have Adult Swim, you know, Rick and Morty and Family Guy and the Sim, you know.
Yeah.
But there really wasn't like a demand for it. And, okay.
All right. Well, we've got a question about Ren and Stimpy from Troy. G'day, Troy.
Good morning, Rod and Eric. What a surreal honor it is to speak with someone who's done so much great work. Favorite reception was Ren and Stimpy. I just was going to ask you about. Seemed pretty edgy for a 10-year-old to be watching that, and
It's not the world's greatest phone line. I'm sorry, Troy, but is there a question about it?
Oh yeah, all the other sound effects that were going on with Ren and Stimpy with the eyelids and the hair, and there's a fair bit of gross stuff going on there. I don't know. I was just going to ask for an Australian accent as well. That was the other thing.
Oh, okay, great idea. Thanks very much for that, Troy. Can you do an Australian accent for us, Eric?
Well, as Stimpy, it's quite possible, mate. Like I just never had an opportunity to try it. But imagine Stimpy as an Australian, right? I mean, how weird would that be?
Can I just say, Stimpy, there's a fair bit of Bugs Bunny in Stimpy there. Is that right? Is that deliberate, or am I mishearing that?
Well, it's funny, because, like, it's all taken from, and thank you for bearing with me with that awful Australian accent I was trying to throw on there. But it's kind of like from this era. I mean, like, what would you say the Three Stooges was, 30s?
40s, yeah, into the 50s on TV as well.
40s into the 50s. So the inspiration for Stimpy, of course, as Billy West has amazingly, I call him a code cracker. He and I are buddies, and I will always praise the ground that he walked on, because I feel like he is, to me, closer to Mel Blanc in a sense that, yes, Billy West has done Mel Blanc voices, but Billy West has created an entire universe like Mel Blanc did. Like Mel Blanc, you know, created the Looney Tunes. And I feel like if you watch an episode of Futurama, you know, aside from Philomar, John DiMaggio and Katie Sagal, it's all Billy West. He's created this amazing universe of characters. And yeah, I mean, Stimpy, the real voice,
is kind of based off of Larry from the Three Stooges. Okay. Hey, Mo, oh boy, I get to use my tools today. And when you amp it up, oh, happy, happy, joy, joy. And it's, you know, not that far away from Bugs Bunny, I guess. Ain't I a stinker?
Yeah, so it's kind of, I kind of like live in the same neighborhood, but yeah. It's,
okay,
it's,
all right.
Yeah, good ear.
All right, Daniel is with us. G'day, Daniel.
Hey, how you doing, guys?
Very well, mate. What would you like to know?
Well, I'd like to know. Also, I do a bit of voices as well, so I could give you guys some my voices as well if you guys want. But
yeah, sure.
Or you want me to get
what voice do you do?
Oh, I can do a lot of different voices. Well, crikey, kick the size of this big beauty. Woo-hoo, Steve Irwin here. By crikey, look at the size of the teeth on that rattlesnake. Whoa, by crikey, you don't want to be bitten by that little biter.
Steve Irwin, all right. Well, we need a new Steve Irwin, although his son, of course, is doing well. What else would you like to ask, Daniel?
Okay, because we also have like Peter Griffin as well, but we can launch straight into the thing as well. So the question I've got to ask is, what's your favorite of all the voices you've ever done? What is your favorite character that you've ever done?
I love that Peter Griffin impression, by the way. That's quite accurate. I almost thought Seth MacFarlane was on the phone with us, but I'm gonna say an amazing Steve Irwin, like you know. I know he's looking down, shining, smiling at that nod. I'd say Bugs Bunny would definitely. I know it might be the obvious answer for all the listeners, knowing how much. If you've seen my social media or follow me on Instagram, I have pictures of me as a kid. I'm wearing a Bugs Bunny hoodie right now, and I would still be wearing it even if I weren't the voice of the character. I love Bugs Bunny that much. But yeah, I feel like, and I always joke about this, nothing gets me past the U.S. border faster than doing the voices when I'm traveling.
Brilliant.
I could be smuggling a pound of heroin in my bag, and all I have to say is, Officer, I've never seen that before in my life! And they'll just let me through. No, just kidding. Please don't check my bags. But, Bugs Bunny is definitely...
He's up there, Doc, because anytime I do this voice... no matter where I am, I always put a smile on someone's face.
You know, it's a bit of like a superpower, I guess.
And so many people are texting in about, you know, I mean, I could embarrass you by reading them all, but feel like a kid again listening this morning. This is awesome, an unreal talent. This is amazing. It's been fantastic. There's so many people saying that. What about singing? Now, Mick in Ballarat in Victoria, he says, as a challenge, could you do Foghorn Leghorn singing Charles Aznavour? Now, what about when one of these characters has to sing? How do you do that?
Charles Aznavour?
Yeah, dance in the old-fashioned way. He was a French Armenian singer, very, very famous.
What was he known for? I mean, does he have a
She, that was a big hit, the song that was used at the start of Notting Hill. So I won't ask you to sing in Charles Aznavour's style, but if you have to sing in the voice of one of your characters, how do you do that?
Okay. Oh, Boomhilda, you're so lovely.
Yes, I know it. I can't help it.
that was like... them at the opera.
Where do I get that wabbit? What do you want with the wabbit? Can you see that I'm much sweeter? I can be your senorita.
Yeah, like I don't know. I could kind of sing in character, or at least hold a tune, or get the right notes. Unfortunately, there was a project. That was supposed to happen. It might still be happening. I don't know. I haven't heard much about it in over a year now. It was called Bye Bye Bunny. And it was announced because we had one of the guys that worked on the SpongeBob music. I think maybe the main composer who worked on the SpongeBob musical do a lot of these tracks for us, all these songs. And it was supposed to be Bugs Bunny retiring or wanting to get out of the spotlight. And then something happens. I think Daffy gets kidnapped, and they have to go on an adventure to save Daffy.
But it was going to be, I think, one of those like Chuck Jones musical numbers. And,
well, because Seth MacFarlane, he's a singer in real life, you might say.
Well,
his characters sing all the time.
Yeah, absolutely. But I mean, I think he's an anomaly. His talent is just, you know, I would have to train to get to his natural talent of where he is as a singer.
But
I know he trains as well, I'm sure.
One of the interesting things that he does, well, I'd be interested to know whether you do it as well, is, say, with Stewie, he sort of modeled him on Rex Harrison. So when you're, you know, creating a character or doing the voice of one of these legendary characters, do you have somebody else in your mind as well that gives you the in to that character, to that voice?
Well, for all the Looney Tunes characters, of course, the DNA and I call Mel Blanc the blueprint. He was the original. I will never tamper with, trying to add any ingredients to what he already established as these characters. Now, when it comes to creating a brand new character, absolutely. Anyone that I've ever met in my whole life has now been included in my memory Rolodex and my vocal Rolodex of go-to voices that I could possibly use. And that might be an impression of like maybe a celebrity or a mix. I play a voice on a show on Disney called Kiff.
And there's a character on there named Reggie. He's kind of like this kid that like plays VR in his room all the time. And I kind of based it off of like slightly off of an old roommate that I had. So, yeah, be careful. If you're hanging out with me, you might end up on television. And there was another character on that show by the name of Roy Fox. And I'm basically just doing my Will Arnett impression. Oh, boy. Look out, Will. I got your number, buddy. Yeah. So, yeah. I love and another fellow Canadian, of course. But anyone's fair game. Okay. Anyone I know, anyone I've seen on TV.
This is Overnight with Rod Quinn, and we are privileged to have Eric Bowser with us. Not only the voice of Bugs, but all those great characters and beyond that. Owen is with us as well. G'day, Owen.
Welcome back, Rod. Hello. I'm having so much fun this morning. Look, I was actually wondering how much Eric sort of factors in your voices into your everyday conversations with others. I remember what inspired this question is I remember an interview with my favorite actor, the late, great Robin Williams, who, you know, would break into a funny voice every 5 seconds during an interview quite often. And one interviewer asked him, "Do you do this when you're reading to your kids at home?" And Robin Williams says, yes, I do all the time. And sometimes my kids have to say, "Dad, can you just stop using the funny voices and reading your normal voice?" And I said, just curious, do you find yourself talking in voices, you know, in your personal life, and how do people react to that?
Thank you very much. Yes, do you drop into these voices all the time?
Owen, I do it all the time, Owen, and I tell you,
it's so funny that you mentioned that with Robin Williams and his kids and reading to them at night. I totally do that with my son, Riker, and he is totally like, okay, I get it, you can do voices. I'm afraid I'm going to steer him away from the family business. My son might just end up becoming an accountant in Encino, California somewhere, but and not go into animation. But yeah, voices, no matter where I am, they will happen eventually. And again, like Rod said earlier, I'm not shy about like sharing what I do, especially if I'm at like even yesterday I was at McDonald's at the drive-thru and they just started promoting this video game that I did voices for called Multiverses. You guys may have played it, and it's like this fighting platform game where all of the Warner Brothers properties fight each other. So you could have anyone from Game of Thrones fighting anyone from Looney Tunes or Batman. And they have these like little collector, packs in these Happy Meal toys. And I asked them specifically if they have anything Bugs Bunny, and they did. They handed it to me.
And I was like, you never know who you're going to save at the drive-thru.
And you should have seen the look on that woman's face. Her eyes lit up. and they asked me to do a selfie in the drive-thru. So
a selfie for someone's voice, that's a first.
A drive-thru selfie, yeah.
What about, and Rosa wants to know about this, when you're recording and you've got a conversation going on, say, between Bugs Bunny and Daffy Duck, do you just switch from one voice to the other? We've heard that all morning, of course, but or do you record all of one and then, you know, cut it all together? How does it work?
Well, I guess it depends on how fast it is, because you never know how much time you have in a session.
And who's going to show up, like Woody Woodpecker in a Looney Tunes cartoon. I usually, if I'm recording something like Bugs Bunny Builders, a preschool show that featured, you know, Bugs, Porky, Daffy, Tweety, and Lola as a construction crew, I voiced
Bugs Bunny, Daffy Duck, and Tweety Bird. I thought I saw Wad Quinn. I did see Wad Quinn.
Yeah, I would record Tweety first, then Daffy, or actually Bugs first, then Daffy, then Tweety, to kind of separate Tweety and Bugs, because they kind of like live in the same neighborhood. I call the voices of Looney Tunes the House of Mel Blanc.
Some of them live in the attic, like Tweety, and a little bit lower is Bugs, and then we have Daffy.
And in the basement, we have Pepe Le Pew, not because he has been cancelled, of course, but because of the depths of his voice.
Where does Foghorn Leghorn live?
I say he lives in a different house because he's so loud, son.
Yeah, they keep him away. He's a very loud character.
I said that the lights are on, but nobody's home. That's a joke, son.
I remember in an episode of Get Smart, there was someone who was impersonating voices or doing voices, and Max says, oh, he's so good he can even do Frank Gorshin. And Frank Gorshin, who played the Riddler in Batman on the TV show, he was a renowned voice expert. Can you do Rich Little? Can you do other, you know, like Jack Nicholson or Robert De Niro, people have suggested? I mean, people used to always do James Cagney, you dirty rat, and all that. Do we have these days, again, enough distinctive voices to do for our actors? I don't know anyone could impersonate, you know, Bradley Cooper or something. Who even knows what he sounds like?
Well, if I were to do Bradley Cooper, I'd just do Rocket Raccoon, you know, from Guardians of the Galaxy.
You know, it's funny when I heard, like, when I knew that he was voicing Rocket Raccoon, I was like, oh boy, here we go. Another Hollywood A-lister that's just going to use, like, their own kind of normal pit. And then, like, he comes out with, like, Rocket Raccoon, and you kind of just like, wow, I would not expect that from Bradley Cooper, and good for him. Like, he's a real character actor. And it's funny that you do mention, like, think about the times of Rich Little and Frank Gorshin, and they had the pick of the litter when it came to actors and character actors to impersonate, because back then, everyone had a thing, you know? Everyone had a sound and a specific voice. If you watch those, like, Dean Martin celebrity roasts, every celebrity was so unique and different. And I do agree, you know, it is sad to think that we might live in a time where people kind of, especially some A-listers, kind of just a little, they blend together a little, you know, and then we could even talk about the subject of celebrities in cartoons. I could go on about that all day, but yeah, man, I guess I can approximate like a Jeff Bridges, man. I don't know when he started talking like this, you know, that, I guess, the Big Lebowski, man. You know, this carpet really ties the whole room together. And, you know, my favorite politician, he's one of my favorite cartoon characters, is number 45, you know, these Canadians, they come over the border. And I believe these Canadians are going to steal all the voiceover work. You know, we got to put a stop to these guys. You know, they may be polite. They have a food in Canada. It's called Putin. It's French fries, gravies, and cheese. And I love Putin. I could have Putin in my mouth all day.
There was a, when they remade, or did they remastered the movie Spartacus, and they added some extra scenes. I'm sure you know where I'm going with this. But they'd lost the voice track. And so for the scenes with Laurence Olivier, I think it was, they got Anthony Hopkins. No, Richard Burton it was, I'm sorry, because he was Welsh. They got Anthony Hopkins to loop the voice. Now, have you been asked to do anything like that where you have to do somebody's voice for a project when maybe they're no longer around?
Well, yeah. I mean, during the pandemic, a very renowned actor by the name of James Hong, who just, I believe, got his star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame.
He's been in more movies than any other person in history. He was the bloke in the Chinese restaurant episode of Seinfeld. He was the bloke in the restaurant.
He was Cartwright, Table of Four, Cartwright. Yeah, I've met him, and he's great. And there was a Batman straight-to-DVD project that we were working on during the pandemic when we were all recording from home. And I guess technically his setup wasn't, I don't know if the microphone was aimed properly, but there were some consonants and sounds of the words that he was saying that the microphone wasn't picking up. Like if he were to say, "Oh yes, look at that flock of birds," like the S of birds would be missing. So it would sound like, "Look at that flock of bird." And then I would have to come in and finish his S's.
Unbelievable.
I was the plural guy. If you need your plural, Warner Brothers says, if you need your plurals fixed, call Eric Bauza, 1-800-555. Yeah, like I'm the plural guy. Right. I'll just come in and finish your sentences for you.
All right. We've only got a few minutes left. George is with us. Good morning, George. What question would you like to ask?
G'day, Rod. G'day, Eric. Great to hear from you. Something, because I'm a bit of a geek and I like to go to these fan conventions and you get a lot of these voice artists on anime shows and things like that coming along. And the thing is, of course, a lot of these cartoons go across borders. And I'm just wondering whether you've had the experience of having to voice English language versions of, say, Japanese anime or something foreign, or the other thing maybe to actually go the other way where you might have to maybe give people advice who are like Japanese voice actors trying to sort of translate the English idioms and cultural idioms into Japanese or Korean or something else, because I have heard some voice actors have done that kind of thing.
All right. Thanks, George. Eric.
Yeah. I mean, animation exists all over the world, and you just never know what's going to be the next big thing and whether or not that needs English translation. I did the recently there was a cartoon that was kind of like a reboot or a reimagining of Astro Boy called Pluto. I believe that's what it was called, and I'm pretty sure it's on Netflix. And yeah, there's Japanese to English translation, and the difficulties therein are like, What could be said in just a few vowel and consonant sounds in Japanese could take up more time in American. So you run the difficulty of just English to whatever it translates to, and vice versa. Like, have I ever needed to like learn a language for? Actually, it's kind of funny. Another animation. Animated series from Netflix called Trece, which was based off of a very popular comic book series in the Philippines, which is my heritage. But, you know, I my parents are from the Philippines. They immigrated to Canada in the 60s. I only know all the swear words in Tagalog, which is the native Filipino language, watching my dad watch NHL hockey, cursing at the TV when his team didn't win. But, I had to learn from the translator, the proper way to say things in a language that I should naturally know. So, it's kind of a funny thing. You just never know what kind of challenges you do have to face, especially when it comes to language in world animation.
Tell me, is there a voice or an accent or something that you can't get? That they've asked you to do it or you've tried to do it and you just can't nail it for whatever reason?
You know, it's been a while since I've had that hump or challenge. But the great thing about voiceover, unlike any other performing arts in the world, when you don't get that role or you do miss the mark, which happens all the time to each and every one of us that's in the industry, before I leave the room, I always go, I can't do that. But you know who can? Call him, her, him, and her. Like, I always recommend, like, the right performer for the role. And they usually book it. They usually find that person that I suggested, guy, girl, whoever, and they always end up getting the role.
Is it a small community, then, of people who can really do these things, you know, to the standard? Everyone thinks they can, you know, imitate some actor. But, I mean, to do it to a professional standard for big screen movies and TV shows, are there only a few of you?
I think I feel like there it is voiceover, as many of us as there are, it always seems like it's still a small community. And it's growing, though. I'm glad to see it grow. I'm glad that I got to be I am a part of it. Like, I never thought in a million years that I'd actually be friends with the Animaniacs. You know what I mean? Like, Rob Paulson, Tress McNeil, and Jess Harnell. Like, I never thought in a million years that the people that I grew up watching, like, their names on the screen, I never thought that I would actually meet these people, let alone be friends with them, and how welcoming they've been. And I will always carry that kindness to the next generation. I, again, having taught that class last night, it always reminds me about when I got my start, and how I promised myself that I would always be there for that next generation to help guide them and help this industry grow, as opposed to, like, keep it all for myself, being the greedy duck that I am. Woo-hoo, woo-hoo.
We've only got about 2 minutes left. Bugs Bunny is probably the most famous voice in cartoons, in animation, and you do the Bugs Bunny voice. You are Bugs Bunny. So what do you aim for? What is the dream now? What's a character or a voice that you want to do?
Well, Doc, I would love to see Bugs Bunny play Batman in a cartoon one time. Or,
like more superhero stuff. I would love, I was actually just in the new X-Men cartoon as all of the Sentinels, all the big robots that try to kill the X-Men. And it's awesome when I get to step out of Toontown for a minute and get to do something a little bit more grounded. I mean, X-Men is pretty outrageous, though. It's almost like they built a time-traveling DeLorean and went back to the 90s, and they just started animating from where they left off. It actually premiered yesterday on Disney Plus, so if you're listening, you should check it out. It's a lot of fun if you grew up in the 90s.
Where does your name come on the credits? Are you right up there up front, you know?
I've kind of become that guy now where it's like the main cast and Eric Bowser, or like I'm at the bottom, which is kind of cool, you know, like kind of like, you know, oh, here's all these youngsters. And then here's that old fart that I'm 44, Rod. Oh, my gosh.
You think Bugs Bunny has gray hair? You should see me.
I love it. We've had so much fun this morning. We've got such a great response. I really appreciate it, Eric. What are you going to do now? What's the next one that you're going to do?
Well, I'm going to go take my dog for a walk. He's been inside. Hope for the best. We'll see. We'll see what happens with Coyote versus Acme, which I'm sure is always on everyone's mind these days. It was a great film that we got to work on, and I sure hope that people eventually get to see it. But I know Warner Brothers is continuing with more Looney Tunes projects. So don't worry.
Okay.
If we don't get to see this one, we'll get to see so many more things coming down the pipeline with Looney Tunes, I guarantee it.
Look for Eric's name in the credits, and more importantly, listen for his voice on those movies and TV shows and games and cartoons. Thank you so much.
Yeah, that's all, Rod.
ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.